So we are actually in the 11th chapter where Krishna has shown his divine form to Arjuna, and Arjuna sees the whole world in that divine form, world emerging from him and then merging back into him. All the whole universe is in that, and so he initially has fear because he sees this terrible form and all the death happening. But then his mind gets filled with devotion, with love, with reverence. And so he starts these verses of praise, which from 36 to 44, where he is praising this divine form of the Lord. And he's saying that, oh Lord, you are the whole universe. Everything has come from you. And according to Swami Chinmayananda, this is one of the greatest praises or prayers to the Lord that you can find in any scripture in the world, not only in the Hindu scripture, but he feels that even in the, it is such a universal prayer that can be applicable to all religions, does not pertain to any particular religion. And actually we had in the 38th verse, we actually didn't finish it, but this is the some of the points that he has mentioned, and we had done the first three, so we'll continue from there as to who this Supreme Lord is and what are his qualities. The 38th verse, according to Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda, is a beautiful combination of devotion and knowledge. It's beautifully combined. This one particular verse is enough to know who this Lord is. Where is he? How does he come? What does he do? Everything is covered in this 38th verse, so we'll go over that today. Tvam adi devah purushah puranah. Tvam asya vishvasya param nidhanam. Vetasi vedyancha parancha dhama. Tvaya tatam vishvam anantarupa. So he says, you are the primal God. You are the primeval Lord, the one from whom the whole universe came, because the God alone was, even in the Bible it says God alone was, and then he decided to create the universe. So you are the original father, the original God of the universe. Purushah Puranaha, you are the ancient spirit. As we had talked before last week, actually 2 weeks ago when we met, that this whole universe is a combination of Purush and Prakriti, spirit and matter. Matter is what we can see, the visible world of, not only the visible world of objects, but also the thoughts and the emotions and the ideas. They are all temporary. They are all consistent of matter. Of course, this is the gross matter that you can see, the table, the hand, the face. But then there are subtle. The mind and the intellect are the subtle aspects. Body is the gross, and the mind and intellect are the subtle aspects. But all of this, my body, my mind, my intellect, my desires, and this world of objects, emotions and thoughts, all of this is considered as matter. It is temporary, it is changing, it is destructible, it is consists of either gross matter or subtle matter that you cannot see, but it still consists of matter. But there is this spirit that is within us and without us, the consciousness, the life principle, the God. And he says, you are that eternal spirit. So it is because of that spirit that this whole universe is enlivened. That's why I'm able to talk. That's why you are able to listen. That's why the plants grow. So he says, you are the ancient spirit. Tvamasya vishvasya param nidhanam. And of this world, you are the refuge. You are the support. You are the refuge. Gurudev also says that when we are in the world gives us a lot of problems, you know. My husband or my wife or my children or my job or my boss or my neighbor or the Democrats. So people give us problems. And so the only refuge is to go within. Whenever I'm having a problem, whenever I'm having a conflict, they say just close your eyes and turn within and you will find the inner refuge, the inner support, the inner. It's like a bird that is flying and she's flying all over. And then when she gets tired, then she comes back to her nest or comes back to the tree to rest for a while. And then again, she can go out and search for food. And so similarly, when I am working in the world and I'm facing problems, one way is, of course, you say, oh, I'm overwhelmed with problems. But if you turn inward, just take a few minutes out, take a time out and sit for a few minutes, close your eyes and go inward, you'll get the inner strength. You'll feel that inner presence of the Lord. So it is like you are the tree, you are the support, where I can rest the bird of my mind. So he says, Tvamasya Vishvasya Param Nidhanam. So that we had covered in detail last week. In fact, I spent about 45 minutes talking about this one thing. And those who want to know that, I would recommend you listen to that again. It is available on firstpower.info. I think Tony puts it on. Thank you. So please listen to that again, because that is the essence of the teaching of the Upanishads. What we had talked two weeks ago about how this world is an appearance. The world is an illusion on that consciousness, but we won't go into detail. That will take too long. Then it says, Vetasi Vedyan Cha Parancha Dhamma. You are the Veta. You are the knower. You are that which is to be known. Vedyam Param Dhamma. You are the supreme abode. Tvaya tatam, by you is pervaded Vishvam Anant Rupa. This universe of Anant forms, of many forms, is pervaded by you. So we'll spend a little bit talking about what is the knower, what is to be known, what is Paramdham, and what is that which is pervading the whole universe. So he says, you are the knower. So why do we say God is the knower? Because God knows everything, right? You say, you know, you even tell the children, look, you know, you may hide it from your parents, you may hide from your teacher, but God knows everything because He is in our heart as the consciousness. Also, it is says you are the knower because it is the consciousness that is actually going out to know. Like when I'm seeing a person or I'm seeing a picture, my eyes are seeing, but it is my consciousness who is going out through the eyes to see that picture. And then I say, okay, that picture is Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda. So that is something I know, or this is a person I know, Carrie. But suppose a strange person comes and I don't know it, then my mind says, who is this person? But it is the consciousness that is going out to know, to see. Then when I'm hearing something and I hear a note of music, or I hear somebody calling my name, then it is the consciousness that is going out. So the ears, the eyes, the nose are the instruments through which the consciousness knows. And even through the mind, it goes out to feel the emotions. Through the intellect, it goes out to understand concepts and ideas. So the consciousness is the knower, and this body, mind, and intellect are the equipments that are used by the consciousness within me to know. To know the world of objects, to know the world of emotions, to know the world of thoughts. And obviously, if this consciousness was not within us, then what would happen? You know, then this beautiful body, Swami Chinmayananda calls it, it would become a beautiful manure to just fertilize the ground. You know, that's all this body. You may say, oh, I'm so beautiful, beauty queen, you're a beauty queen, and you are Miss Universe. The moment the consciousness is gone, nobody wants to even touch her. You know, they say, quickly, take her, bury her, or cremate her. You may be Einstein, or you may be a person with Down syndrome. But when the consciousness leaves you, then that body is of no use. Then we quickly need to start smelling, and then you have to, you know, the undertaker has to put all kinds of. Why? You say, oh, lovely, lovely, lovely. Lovely only until the consciousness is there. In fact, in Bhaj Govindam, he says, that bharya bibrati tasmin kai. He says even your wife who loves you so much and says, oh, you are my most darling, the moment the consciousness leaves, she says, get him out of the house. Take him quickly. Why? Because nobody wants. So he says, you are the consciousness, you are the knower, you are the one that is the life-giving, and you are the Vedyam, and you are the only thing that needs to be known. You are the one that needs to be known. You say, oh, but I need to study, you know, I need to study medicine and engineering, and I need to learn how to cook, and I need to learn how to drive, and I need how to run a business, I need to learn how to vote. Yeah, those are all okay, but the one thing, that the most important thing that really needs to be known, without which your life is incomplete, is the consciousness within. And that is the tragedy of human existence, that we spend all our life in knowing everything that is to be known about the world. You know, we surf the net, and we know what is happening in Somalia, and then we know what is, the somebody got murdered in the Middle East. In the olden days, you know, news used to take a day. Next day, you had a newspaper. Now, instantly, within 10 seconds of something happened, you know it. And people are all the time on the computer, on the iPhone, on this and that, you know, trying to get knowledge, nowhere. And in that process, they forget to know who they are. Who am I? And that is the most important to be known. Unless you know that, the world will always give you problems. If you think you are this body, then the body will have problems. And you'll say, oh, I'm having problems. My body is sick. If you say, I am a very emotional person, I am the mind, then the mind will have ups and downs. If you say, I am the intelligence, then you will have successes and failures. But as long as you are focused on this, you will have problems. But if the moment you say, I am this consciousness, and I am occupying this body, mind, and intellect, and using the body, mind, and intellect to function in the world, then you have no problems. Yeah, my body has problems, but I am the consciousness. I don't have problems. My mind has problems, my intellect. Yeah, you will take care of the problem, your physical problem or emotional problem, but you will not be affected. So he says, you are that which is to be known. And by known, we always think of as known as something to be known. Okay, like I know that pillar outside, or I know that person, or I know that picture, I know that chair. But God is not an object to be known. And that is one thing that we have to understand very clearly, because people always think, one day when I will be meditating and then God will appear in front of me, and then he will say, what do you want, my child? And then I will ask, and then I will get whatever I want. God is not an object to be known. God is the subject. He is me. He is my essence. He is my true nature. So God is the subject. So when they say God to be known or to be realized, it is not to be known as an object, but to be understood as me, as the self, as the consciousness within me. And that is a very important point to understand, because they say that we're all the time looking for God outside, you know, in heaven or maybe in the church or the temple. Yeah, he is there. He is in heaven. He is in the church and temple and mosque. He's there in all the people and animals and birds. But the scripture says, pehle aap pehchano re sadho, pehle aap pehchano, bina aap chine paar brahm ko kaun kahe main jano. First, know yourself. Know yourself as that truth. As that conscious. And once you experience, once you know the Lord's presence within, then it is very easy to see him everywhere. That's why Jesus could say that, love thy neighbor as thyself. That's why Shankaracharya and Swami Chinmayananda and Buddha had universal love for all of us, because they had discovered the truth within. And once you discover the truth within, then it is very easy to see God everywhere. So instead of looking for him outside, start by looking within. Of course, you should see him in all the beings and all the creatures and have love for everybody. That is very, very important. In fact, later on in one of the verses, at the last verse of this 11th chapter, he says, that to know me, you have to have love for all beings. But he says, you are the one to be known. That is the only thing, that is the most important thing. Now, how do we know him? So we say, we meet with a teacher and we read. And that is very good. You know, reading is very good, meeting with teachers. The problem I find with a lot of people is that they get addicted to reading, just as you're addicted to maybe alcohol or cigarette or the internet or TV. Reading can also become, reading is very good, but when reading becomes just rapid, you know, like you're reading a novel, okay, you're reading a storybook or a novel, you read it fast, but religious books cannot be read like a novel. You cannot say, burr, 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 okay, I've read, finished, Mandukya Upanishad, finished. Now, Gita, I've read chapter 1 to 18, not like that. Eckhart Tolle says, and I like that, very good point. He says that whenever you're reading a religious book, read it twice. You pick up the first page, read one chapter, stop, and then go back and read the first chapter again. Don't go to the second chapter unless you have read it twice. Same thing, the second chapter, third. And it's okay to go slow because ultimately all the texts reveal the same truth. So it's not the number of books you have read, but the depth to which you have understood. So read a few books and read them carefully, read them again and again. And then that knowledge becomes firm, becomes pakka, becomes abiding in you. Another thing people do, which a lot of people love it, is that they love to read a variety of philosophy. They say, I don't want to be tied to one. So they want, you know, for 1 month, they will read Vedanta, then they will read Buddhist philosophy, then they will read German, and then they will go to some ancient Greek philosopher. And they will come and ask me, have you read this? I said, sorry, I haven't read. I don't read that much, sorry. But what that does is only creates confusion in your mind. Because, see, the goal is one. Whether you're reading German philosophy or Confucius or Buddhism or Greek, there's nothing wrong with that. Because the goal is all one, whether you're reading Vedanta. And all paths lead to that same goal, like you're going to the top of the mountain. You can take any path. You can walk straight, you can go around, you can go by bike, you can go by car, depending on what you have. But say you go up a little way and then you say, I don't like this path. I'm going to go down. Then I'm going to take another path. And so you walk up there and then you come down. You will never reach the top. So similarly, if you read one philosophy one day and then you say 1 week later, now let me try. Then you're coming down and then you're starting a new one. So what they say that pick the path that you like. Pick that philosophy that you like and then go firm and deep into it. Then only you will reach. Otherwise, you will be spending your life in searching. So like if you like Vedanta, then stick with that and focus on that. So he says, you are the one to be known and the one who is the knower. And he says, Param Dhamma, he is the Param Abode, the Supreme Abode. Again, in the 15th chapter, Sri Krishna says, Natad Bhasayate Suryaha. Na shashanko na pavakaha, yad gatva na nivartante, tad dham paramam mama. That is my supreme abode where the Lord resides. Where the Lord resides, where he says, where the natad bhasayate surya na shashanko na pavakaha. What it means is that the supreme abode, which is the Lord, cannot be illumined by the sun, by the moon, or by the fire. So what it means is that it is this consciousness that the Lord is, that is illumining the sun. The sun is illumined by him. The moon is illumined by him. The fire, the light that comes on, you know, the energy that comes in the electricity, everything is provided by that Lord. But the through the light of the sun or the moon or the, you cannot see him. You can only see him when your mind is quiet and you turn your attention inward. So he says Param Dham. Paramdham means the supreme abode. Paramdham also means it is the supreme abode of the whole universe. The whole universe is contained in him. As we see in that picture, the whole universe is contained in that Lord. He is the one who is the supreme abode, who is the support of the whole universe. The whole universe is in you. You are the everything in it. So that is the meaning of Paramdham. And then he says, Yad gatva na nivartante, in the 15th chapter, Tad dham paramam mama. He says, Yad gatva na nivartante. He says, once you go towards me, you can never return. And that is true. You know, those who have started pursuing the spiritual path, Swami Chinmayananda says that the spiritual path is a one-way street. You only have entry, you have no return. He says, oh my God, you mean once I go, I cannot return? No, you cannot. Because this knowledge is so captivating, it is so fascinating, it is so wonderful, that one who starts on the spiritual path cannot turn around. He can no longer go to his old ideas of foolishness and stupid behavior and running after the world for happiness. And as you slowly, slowly progress more and more towards the Lord, the world goes further and further away. So that's why it says, this abode of mine is a one-way street. Once you come to me, so it says, be very careful. The Lord says, don't come towards me, because Krishna, that's why his name Krishna means akarshan, attraction. He's so attractive. The Lord is so attractive. He says, once you come to me, you are caught in my grip. You will not be. And that is wonderful. That's what we want. We want to be closer to the Lord. We want to know him. So it's not in a negative way, but it is in a positive way, that once you look at the life of Mirabai, once she decided that Krishna is my beloved, then she didn't care about what the world thought or what her in-laws thought or everybody. Look at all these great saints. No matter how many problems they had, they didn't give up that. So that's why he says, you are my Paramdham, you are the supreme abode. Tvaya tatam vishvam ananta rupa. This world of numerous forms is all pervaded by you. You say, what do you mean pervaded? Pervaded means everything is nothing but that consciousness. Just as all the lights in the world are pervaded by electricity, right? Whether all the lights, whether a light in Bangladesh or light in Africa or light in the US, they're all pervaded by that one electricity. All the fans in the world, all the heaters, all the air conditioners, all the coolers, everything is illumined by that one electricity, which is the same. Electricity in India is the same. It is the same protons and electrons and neutrons. So just as one electricity pervades all the objects, all the electrical appliances, so he says, you as that consciousness pervade everything. Everything is illumined by you. Everything is nourished by you. Everything is supported by you. In fact, you alone have become all that. And once you know that, then you know everything. Like once you know H2O, you know H2O is water. Now once you know H2O, then whether you see ocean water which is salty, or whether you see lake water which is sweet, or whether you see a running spring, whether you see rain water falling, whether you see snow, you see hail, you even see the clouds, you say, I know, they are all nothing but H2O. Once you have known H2O, then you have known any form of water anywhere. So that's what they say, that once you have known that consciousness, once you have known that, then everything becomes known to you. Because you say, you are all of them. And that's why the saints could see that. In fact, all the saints, I have told this story before. There was this very saintly woman in the Himalayas. Neeru had gone to this trip. I think Hansa went. And there they say, when you meet that lady, she's a very saintly lady. And they say, what is she? She's an ordinary woman. Does she give talks? No. Does she give lectures? No. Is she scholarly? No. Then how is she saintly? Because what she would do, any man would come, he would say, this is my Krishna, and would embrace him. And any woman comes, this is my Radha, she would embrace him. So she saw God and goddesses in all men and women. So he said, they are all gods. All the men and all the women are the mother goddess. So she embraced everybody. That's all you need to be a saint. So that's why he says that is you are the one that is illumining. You are the one that is granting everything. All my wishes, all my desires, all whatever I need is ultimately given by you. Talking about getting the desire fulfilled is, reminds me of a little story. There was this Irish Catholic priest. And so he goes to this young girl's house. He says, "Oh, lassie, how are you?" She says, "I'm fine, father. How long have you been married?" "2 years, father." "So any wee ones, you know, any little kids yet?" "No, father, no wee ones yet." So he says, "Okay, I'm going to Rome. I'll light a candle, you know, for you in Rome. And maybe your wish will be fulfilled." So he goes to Rome, and 8-10 years, he doesn't come back. He gets posted somewhere else. And 10-12 years later, he happens to come back to that same village, and he comes to that lady's house. He says, "Oh, lassie, how are you?" "I'm fine." "So any wee ones yet? You know, you've been married 10 years. "Father, in the last 10 years, I had 3 sets of twins and 4 singles, 10 children." You know, Catholics, they don't practice birth control. "So I've had 3 sets of twins and 4 singles, 10 children in the last 12 years. So he says, "Oh, that's very nice. And where's that husband of yours?" He says, "He's gone to Rome to put off that damn candle that you lit." So you be careful what you wish for. It might be fulfilled. But anyway, he says, you are the fulfiller of all the wishes. Tvam tvaya tatam vishvam ananta rupa. Of this universe of endless forms, you are the one that is nourishing it, that is supporting it, and that is doing everything that is happening in this world. Any comments on this? Yeah, please, I said go to the internet, firstpower.info. Last 2 weeks ago, he has put it on the net. I spent 45 minutes explaining this. I'm sorry, because it's too lengthy a subject. But in simple, in one simple sentence, you say God is everywhere. And God is pervading everything. Everything emerged from God. Then why don't I see God? Because everything is an appearance, is an illusion. Just as a magician creates a magic world when you go to Las Vegas and creates this world which looks real to you, but then with one, suddenly he makes it disappear. So this world is an illusion created by him out of himself. And we have got lost in that illusion because of our vasanas, our desires. So we think this world is real. But when you wake up to that truth, when you understand that there is one consciousness, then this world will still be there. It's not that the world will disappear, but you will see the Lord in all of them. You and I don't see it because we are still conditioned by our vastness. But once you wake up to that truth, only then this world will look to you like a dream, like an appearance. Until then, the world is real, the world is present. But actually the world is nothing but the Lord himself. But we don't see it because we don't have the saint's eyes. We don't have the eyes of wisdom. But please go to that website, firstpower.info. 2 weeks ago, I spent 45 minutes explaining that. If I start again, then we'll never get beyond that subject. Sorry. We did, right? Yeah, the whole theory of creation. No, I have the same problem. When I go and listen to a lecture, it's very hard. We listen to it twice. So either you should listen to it twice or go home and read the book. You know, this book you have, go home and reread it. Then the knowledge will become. And then, because then he puts it on the internet. So if you hear it again, especially these kind of concepts, I have been listening to Vedanta for close to 20 years. Still so many concepts are not clear to me, hearing again and again from all these teachers. So the first time, it's not easy to grasp it. So it's not anybody's fault. I am the same way. So it's not easy. Yeah, I think that's a very good question. There are two aspects to that. First of all, when you go and pray, there is some power in prayer. Even though there are karmas, we are all suffering from our karmas. But he's the karma faldata. He's the giver of the karmas. And he has the ability to modify them. That's number one. But even if the person does not get well and for some reason he, you know, doesn't get well or passes away or whatever, the prayer gives us the strength to handle the situation. Say I'm sick or somebody else in my house is sick. When you go to the temple to pray or to the church or what happened, then you get an inner peace and inner silence. So your ability to handle that sickness improves. Say it's your child or even yourself. You know, when I'm sick, oh, I'm in so much pain, I'm hurting, I'm so unhappy. But when I pray, then the Lord gives me strength to handle. The illness may remain the same, but I feel stronger because I get an inner peace, an inner silence. So prayer has two benefits. One is, of course, it's a possibility, though not too much change will happen. Yeah, it can be modified. You know, you cannot say that if a person was supposed to die next day, he won't die, for example. But it can be modified. The karmas can be modified by prayer, especially if the prayer is sincere, comes from the heart. And if that's why they say when a lot of people pray for somebody, that person gets well. And in fact, they did a study. I don't know if it was valid or not, but that there was one group that a lot of people were praying for in the hospital and another group, nobody was praying for them. And they said that group that was prayed for apparently got well sooner. So there is some power in prayer, but more than that, it is when you chant the name of the Lord or when you remember him, it gives you inner peace and strength. So there is a great power in the name of the Lord. That's why it is one name of Ram. When you say Ram with love, it is equal to Vishnu Sahasranam. It is equal to the 1,000 names of the Lord. So chanting the name of the Lord has a lot of power and remembering him. So yeah, it's both. Because you are channeling positive energy to that person. And there is, you know, there are subtle energies called Reiki, and all those energies are there. With people who can practice Reiki can even heal people far away, you know. So there are a lot of forces that we don't know about. But it never hurts to pray. Never hurts, never anything wrong. Yeah, prana is the life force. It's the physiological functions, which is manifested as breath, manifested as digestion, circulation, absorption. But see, yoga, part of the yoga is physical. You know, part is just doing those exercises. But when the exercises are just done, like there are some things called Bikram yoga, you know, where the people do and in the hot weather, they have 110 degree temperature and they are doing vigorous and sweating and all. Now that is a purely physical. There the benefits will be only physical. There will be benefits, you know, if you're sweating and exercising. So that is like any other form of aerobic exercise. You go to the gym and do it. But a lot of the yoga has to do with the mind because you're doing it slowly and you're concentrating and then you're observing the breath. And they say that when you are watching the breath or when you're observing the breath, or when you are one with the breath, then what happens is your mind becomes quiet. Because the mind and the breath, I have mentioned many times, are like two branches of a tree. Raman Maharishi says, Shakha Yordvai Shakti Moolaka Chitta Vayuvrat Chit Kriyayuta Shakha Yordvai Shakti Moolaka. He says, the chit and the vayu, the breath and the mind are two branches of the tree. Like there is a tree which has two branches and is nourished by one root. Right, there is a common root which nourishes both the branches. So the breath and the mind are two branches nourished by consciousness. So when you're watching your breath or when you're paying attention to the movements and your mind becomes quiet, then in that silent mind, the consciousness shines. So that's why yoga is very beneficial, because it brings you closer to the truth. So because you're doing it carefully with attention and watching the breath, and like you end with the yoga with Shavasana, where you are relaxing the whole body and the mind. So that relaxation is very good because it takes you closer to the truth. The more your mind becomes quiet, the more your body becomes relaxed. Also yoga teaches, you know, relaxation of the body, the mind, the closer, because that reduces the agitations in the mind. And the what we are doing on Thursday evening, where we are talking about purification of the mind, Once you reduce the agitations of the mind, you come closer to the truth. That's why yoga is very beneficial, because it helps to quieten the mind. But then what I always say, that yoga should then lead to meditation. It should not end as yoga. See, some people make yoga as the final goal. Yoga is a path which should lead you to samadhi. That's why in the Ashtanga yoga, you know, of Patanjali, yoga is, yogasana and pranayama are two limbs of that. There are eight limbs. The final is samadhi or marjar. So when your mind becomes quiet, then you turn your attention inward to who I really am. And so yoga is very beneficial. Yeah, it's very nice. And it does open the, you know, the impurities of the mind, and then the flow of energy, because we have the seven chakras in our body and they're all connected. So the flow of energy is very good when the pranas are purified. First, he has talked about all this world you are. You are the universe. You are everything. Okay, okay, that's very good. But how about, you know, Jesus, or how about Krishna, or how about Buddha, or how about Shiva, or how about Mother Goddess? Are you those also? You know, nowadays we know God as, you know, Jesus or Krishna or Shiva. But in the olden days, they knew gods as the celestial powers. The god of wind, the god of the fire, the god of rain, the god of the ocean. He says that also you are. So what is happening is his heart is becoming more and more filled with devotion. So 39.
Vayuryamognirvaruna shashankaha prajapatistvam prapitamahascha namo namastestu sahasrakritvaha punascha bhuyopi namo namaste.
So he says, you are Vayu. Vayu means you are the god of wind, god of air. You are Yama. Yama means the god of death. That means even death is under your control. And we know that the lord of the universe never dies. You and I, you know, we die, our body dies. But the consciousness, the lord within, that is the universal consciousness, never dies. Yama, Agni, fire. Fire is also controlled by you. You are the source of the heat. Varuna, you are the lord of the oceans. Even the oceans are rising and falling because of you. And Shashankaha. Shashanka means the moon. The word Shashanka is a very cute name. Shashanka means that which has a rabbit spot. So why do you call the moon that has the rabbit spot? But if you look at a full moon, you see a little black spot on the moon. And if you look closely, it will look like a rabbit. So that's why the moon is said to be a rabbit spot. That means the moon. So you are the power behind the moon. Prajapati. Prajapati means the creator, the Brahmaji, the creator of the whole universe. Even the creator of the universe has been created by you. So that total consciousness, the Brahman, that is the Lord. And here, of course, Krishna is taking on the form, but you can call him Father in heaven, you can call him Allah, you can call him, you know, Brahman, the total consciousness. So even the creator, Prapita Mahascha, you are the grandfather of even the creator. Even the creator you have created. Just as the grandfather, like a grandfather gives birth to the father, and then father gave birth to us, and then we give to the children. So he says, you are the grandfather. You are the origin of even the creator. And then his heart is filled with love. He says, namo namaste. Namaste means namate. The word namate becomes namaste in Sanskrit because of the sandhi. He says, namo namaste, to prostration to you. Sahasra kritvaha, 1,000 times I prostrate to you, O Lord. And then 1,000 times is not enough. He says, punah cha bhuyopi, again and again, namo namaste. Again and again I bow down to you. Again and again I prostrate to you. Again and again I. So the idea being that when we start thinking about who God is and what does he do and how much he has done for us and how loving and how kind and how compassionate he is, then our heart just melts in surrender. Then you just want to bow down, because you tell the Lord of the universe, what can I do for you? I cannot do anything. Can I give you any money? No, because all the money has been given by you to me. Can I praise you? Can I sing your glories? No, because the ability to praise, ability to sing comes from you. Can I build a temple for you? Yeah, you are building, but you are building it for yourself, because the material to build the temple he has given you. The ability to build the temple he has given you. So you are, what are you? You are just an instrument. So the Lord of the universe, there is nothing you can give him, nothing you can do for him. All you can do is just give him your love. Just surrender to him in love and say, God, you are mine and I am yours. That's all I want. Yes, we are not saying that one should not do service. When you do service and help the others, it purifies your mind. It makes your mind purer when you help somebody without any expectation of any reward. When you pray, when you build a temple or a church, or when you go to the temple or church, you pray. When you do charity and you help somebody financially, these are all beautiful things. They help you. But they are all for you, because we can purify our mind by service, by love, by reading the right scriptures, by reading the right knowledge. You are not doing that for him. You are doing it for yourself. So he says, all I can do for Lord is just bow down to you. Thousands of times, he says, thousands of times are not enough. Punascha bhuyopi, again and again, again and again. They say, just turn your heart to him in surrender. Surrender. Turn your heart to him in love and just remember him with love. That is the only thing. And what that will do, the moment you do that, your heart becomes filled with him, becomes filled with that divine joy. And then you become happier and you become more peaceful. And then you become an agent of service. That is the only way. You first fill your heart with this divine knowledge, with the divine glory, and then you can go out and serve the world. And such a person becomes a Buddha or a Jesus or a Shankaracharya or a Chinmayananda or a Guru Gobind Sahib or Mirabai. They became great because they filled their heart with love. And that's what Arjuna is, a beautiful, beautiful line. He says, I bow down to you 1,000 times, O Lord, and even 1,000 times is not enough. Punascha bhuyopi namo namaste. I bow to you again and again, again and again, again and again. So his heart is filled with love and surrender. And then we'll just cover briefly these various gods. Like the god of the wind, we know that. You know that the wind moves. In fact, in one of the Upanishads it says, the wind moves because of him. The fire burns because of him. The mind moves because of him. So the wind works because of him. The airs move because of the Lord. Whether it's a hurricane or whether it's a gentle wind or a breeze, everything. Then Yama. Yama means the god of death. And that is true. Death only has influence upon us, our body, mind and intellect. But the consciousness that is within, nothing happens. So the Lord of the universe does not die. The Brahman, the Father in heaven, the Allah, ever lives. Even the Yama, who is the god of death, here it's called Yama, is personified as a person who comes and takes us at the time of death, is under your control. Yama reminds me of a very beautiful illustration. There was a very famous saint called Bilwa Mangala Thakur. He was a very famous saint, and he composed that, you know, Shri Krishna Govinda Hare Murare He Nath Narayan Vasudeva. We all know that. A lot of the Hindus have chanted that. So that starts with a very beautiful line. He says, Karara Vinde Na Padara Vindam Mukhara Vinde Vini Veshayantam Vatasya Patrasya Pute Shayanam Balam Mukundam Mansas Marami. So he says, I remember that baby Krishna. Now Krishna here, of course, represents the Lord. And in the Puranas, in our scriptures, they say that when the whole world will end, you know, even the Bible talks about 40 days of rain, the 40 days and nights of rain where the whole world will be submerged. So even in the Puranas, they say that ultimately the whole world will end, will be submerged in water. But he says, on that water, this saint says it very beautifully. He says, what do I see? The whole universe is gone. But the baby Krishna is there on a what is that leaf? Water is the, not lotus leaf. It is that oak, that other one. A banyan leaf. It is on the banyan, Vatasya Patrasya. He says he will be on that banyan leaf and the baby Krishna will take his hand and put his little baby toe in his baby mouth, you know, and in his lotus hands, he will have his lotus toes and put it in his lotus mouth. And he is happily swimming in that, on that leaf. And the whole universe is gone. It's such a beautiful symbolism. That means that the Lord of the universe will still be enjoying. Even if the universe is ended, he says, okay, no problem. I'll just recreate it again. So that's, and actually this saint, it's a very interesting thing. This Bilwa Mangala was such a great devotee of Krishna. He used to go to all the spiritual places, to the yatras, you know, all the pilgrimage, Dwarka and Mathura and all. But his problem was he loved girls. So even in the spiritual places, he used to be looking at the girls instead of looking at the temples. So he used to feel very bad. It's true. He used to feel very bad. You know, so what did he do? He blinded himself. He took a needle and blinded both his eyes. He says, oh Lord Krishna, I don't want to see anybody except you. But that was the devotion of that saint. He said, I can't help it. My eyes just go after all these worldly objects and I'm sick and tired of that. And so he actually blinded and he became blind and then he became a great saint and composed thousands of beautiful songs and hymns for the Lord. So that is the devotion. I mean, you and I cannot even comprehend that, you know, to do that. But anyway, that's just beside the point. It's just, I was reading that story. I was so shaken about it that look at the devotion of this person. Anyway, so he says, you are the Lord of Yama. Then he says, you are the Lord of Agni. Agni means fire. So fire is also created by you. So the idea being that anytime you turn on the light, you remember him. Why? Because you are the one that is. So a simple thing like turning on the light can remind you of the God. You turn on the tap in the water and you remember God. Oh, you are the one who has given me the light. You have given me the water. Varuna, you are the Lord of the ocean. So all the water comes from you. All the energy comes from you. Shashankaha, and even the moon. So even the moon gets its ability to move around the sun. And the moon illumines us at night, you know, when you see a beautiful full moon and how the earth is beautifully illumined. I know it's the sun that gives the power to the moon, but ultimately the energy comes from him. Prajapati, and then you are the Pitamahascha, you are the grandfather of even the creator. So that means the whole universe came from you. In the 9th chapter, he says, Pitaha Amasya Jagataha. Mata Dhata Pita Mahaha. So I am the father, I am the mother, and I am the creator of this whole universe. And again, Arjuna says, I prostrate to you, I bow down to you. So the idea being that everything in this universe has come from him. And we'll talk a little bit more about this next week.
Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha. Sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pasyantu, ma kashchit dukkhabhagavane. Om shanti shanti shanti. Hari Om Shri Guru Hari Om.